Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Chapter 27 of Anna Karenina. What are your thoughts on Levin's approach to family? Levin could hardly remember his mother. The idea of her was a sacred memory for him. And in his imagination, his future wife had to be a replica of that enchanting, holy ideal of womanhood, which his mother had been for him. That's the Bartlett translation of that particular line. Oh boy, says I Am Norwegian. Maybe I should have saved my Jungian rant for today. Yesterday I talked about the lover archetype. The lover archetype is the grown man version of the boy. The Oedipal child, as seen here. Oh, there's a picture, apparently. Hopefully. Oh, that's a strange graphic. Like a really weird infographic. One of the shadows is the mama's boy, those who build up their mothers into goddesses and then try to find her in mortal women. I didn't feel like the boy psychology part of the book was as substantive or on point as the man psychology, but seems like I was wrong there. Levin pretty much spells it out. Question for Techrific from I Am Norwegian. Did that quote remind you of the Hermann Hesse book we read? Not sure which book that was, but I would definitely recommend some Hesse. Tolstoy's ability to capture the flow of thoughts was impressive, especially in that trying to focus on something but failing kind of way. What are my thoughts on Levin's approach to family? Partly I respect his dedication to the idea of marriage, but it's also the kind of impossibly idealistic thing that he's going to chase without any luck. He's trying to revive the idea of his mother, who Levin didn't really know. He thinks of her as a goddess, which no human woman can live up to. Even if Kitty said yes, Levin would quickly have discovered that she is not his mother and that she would not happily move to the countryside with him to recreate his fantasy. Alright. I've just remembered that I haven't got the book. It's in the other room. I moved my computer back into my office, guys. I'm sitting in my office for the first time in about 2 weeks. And it's a nice office. I should have done this a long time ago. Why did it take me so long to do that? You know why? I think it's because I had the computer on the kitchen table, and the kitchen table is right next to the heater. So it's the warmest spot in the house. So I think I was just enjoying, because it's winter, it's bloody cold here. I was just enjoying having my computer right next to the heater. I suppose this room isn't really that cold, though. And if it really was that big of a deal, I could just get a little fan heater for about $10 or something. Anyway, doesn't matter. Give me 2 seconds. I'm going to go get the book. And I'm back. I'm not even going to chop that out. Ordinarily, I'd edit out that, but I don't know. Sure you didn't mind waiting 2 seconds. Swim said the mama fishy said, very good prompt. Question one prompt. Thank you, Swim said the mama fishy. I suppose every now and then I get lucky with my prompting. I kind of blipped through this chapter, but this question had me go back and read it a little more closely. I believe Levin has unrealistically idealized what marriage and family life would be. He lost his mother at a very young age, and Tolstoy makes clear that Levin now idolizes her. In earlier chapters, Tolstoy makes clear Levin was going down the sisters of his late friend. It seems it didn't really matter which one he married. Unless he grows and changes, he will be sadly disappointed once he does acquire a wife and children. Once I acquired my own children, I was surprised that these human beings show up with their own personalities, ideas, opinions, etc. And then I realized I gave birth to more family members that I would be navigating a relationship with. I myself would idealize family vacations and outings, at least beforehand. The more disastrous ones, obviously very, very far from that ideal, I labeled magic family moments and just rolled with it. I think Tolstoy may have it wrong. Social media family postings are all alike. Realistic and authentic families are different in their own way. Minnie L said, I also think almost everyone is a bit naive about having children until they have some. I always knew I wanted to have a family, and especially children, and before becoming a mother I thought I had a pretty good idea of what it was going to be like. Oh boy, I was always thought people were a little arrogant when they said, you'll understand when you have children, but now I get it. there was just so much more to it than I was prepared for. Most of all, I think I idealized how I would be as a mother. And one of the hardest things about it has been accepting my imperfections. Even though my expectations were naive, they weren't nearly as idealized as Levin's, but I can still relate to him pretty well. I also always imagined myself having a family and couldn't see it any other way. If I had been single and getting close to 35, I would have probably been quite stressed about finding a father for my children. At that point, I probably wouldn't have cared so much about other aspects of a partner because having a family has always been such a huge thing for me. All right, interesting. Interesting. That's the conversation about this chapter. And we're going to move straight into the next chapter, chapter 28, which goes like this. Early in the morning after the ball, Anna sent a telegram to her husband to say that she was leaving Moscow that same evening. "Really, I must go," she said, explaining her altered plans to her sister-in-law in a tone suggesting that she had suddenly remembered so many things she had to do that it was not even possible to enumerate them all. "Really, I had better go today." Stephen Oblonsky was not dining at home, but promised to be back at 7 to see his sister off. Kitty also had not come, but had sent a note to say that she had a headache. Dolly and Anna dined alone with the children and their English governess. Whether it is that children are inconstant or that they are sensitive, and felt that Anna was not the same person today as she had been that other day, when they had been so fond of her, and that she no longer took any interest in them. At any rate, they suddenly left off playing with their aunt and loving her, and were not at all concerned about her leaving. Anna spent the whole morning preparing for her departure, writing notes to her Moscow acquaintances, making up accounts, and packing. It seemed to Dolly that Anna was not at ease in her mind, but in a state of anxiety that Dolly knew well from her own experience, a state which does not come on without a cause, but generally hides dissatisfaction with oneself. After dinner, Anna went to her room to dress, and Dolly followed her. "How strange you are today," said Dolly. "I? Do you think so? I am not strange, but wicked. It sometimes happens to me. I feel ready to cry." "It's very silly, but it will pass," said Anna hurriedly, and she bent her flushed face over the tiny bag into which she was packing a nightcap and some lawn handkerchiefs. Her eyes shone peculiarly and kept filling with tears. "I did not want to leave Petersburg, and now I do not want to leave here." "You came here and did a good action," said Dolly, scrutinizing her attentively. Anna looked at her with her eyes wet with tears. "Do not say that, Dolly. I have done and could do nothing. I often wonder why people conspire to spoil me. What have I done, and what could I do? There was enough love in your heart to forgive. But for you, Dolly, God only knows what would have happened." "How lucky you are, Anna," said Dolly. "Everything in your soul is clear and good. Everyone has a skeleton in their cupboard, as the English say." "What skeleton have you? Everything about you is so clear." "I have one," said Anna, and unexpectedly, following her tears, a sly, humorous smile puckered her lips. "Well, at least your skeleton is a funny one and not a dismal one," said Dolly, smiling. "No, it is a dismal one. Do you know why I am going today and not tomorrow? This is a confession of something that oppresses me, and I want to make it to you," said Anna, determinedly throwing herself back in an armchair and looking straight into Dolly's eyes. And to her surprise, Dolly saw that Anna was blushing to her ears and to the curly black locks on her neck. "Do you know," continued Anna, "why Kitty did not come to dinner? She is jealous of me. I have spoiled, I mean I was the cause of the ball being a torture instead of a pleasure to her. But really, really, I was not to blame. Or only a very little," she said, drawling out the word "very" in a high-pitched voice. "Oh, how like Stevie you said that," remarked Dolly, laughing. Anna was annoyed. "Oh, no, no. I am not Steva," she said, frowning. "The reason I have told you is that I do not even for a moment allow myself to distrust myself." But at the moment when she uttered these words, she knew they were untrue. She not only distrusted herself, but was agitated by the thought of Vronsky, and was leaving sooner than she had intended, only that she might not meet him again. "Yes, Steva told me that you danced the mazurka with him, and that he... You cannot think how queerly it came about. I only thought of arranging the match, and suddenly it all came out quite differently. Perhaps against my own will, I..." She blushed and stopped. Oh, they feel that at once, said Dolly. But I should be in despair if there were anything serious in it on his side, Anna interrupted her. I am sure that it will all be forgotten, and Kitty will no longer hate me. Well, do you know, Anna, to tell you the truth, I am not very anxious that Kitty should marry him. It is much better that it should come to nothing if he, Vronsky, is capable of falling in love with you in a day. Oh, my goodness, how stupid it would be, said Anna. And again, a deep flush of pleasure suffused her face at hearing the thought that occupied her mind expressed in words. So I am going away, having made an enemy of Kitty, of whom I am so fond. Oh, what a darling she is. But you will put it right, eh, Dolly? Dolly could hardly repress a smile. She was fond of Anna, but it was pleasant to find that she too had a weakness. An enemy? That is impossible. I should so like you all to love me as I love you, and now I love you still more, said Anna with tears in her eyes. Oh dear, how silly I am today. She dabbed her face with her handkerchief and began to dress. Oblonsky, smelling of wine and cigars, with his face red and happy, came in late just as she was about to start. Anna's emotion had spread to Dolly, who, as she embraced her sister-in-law for the last time, whispered, "Remember that I love and shall always love you as my best friend." "I do not know why you should," said Anna, kissing her and trying to hide her tears. "You understood and understand me. Goodbye, my sweet one." All right, there we go. Another chapter down. Thank you very much for listening today, and I will see you tomorrow.